Are we back on?
Mm-hmm. This is an interview with Connie McCready. This is tape 12, side 2. So, the car was totaled then.
Yeah, but it didn't look it. And I went over to my car, and I was starting to open the trunk, and all of a sudden, because I'd picked up some groceries on the way back to City Hall between a meeting. I'd had a luncheon meeting, and I'd... that's the way I had to do anything. My shopping would be 10 minutes here and 10 minutes there,
right.
Sandwich it in. And I started to open the trunk, and the guy from the fire department, bomb squad, yelled at me, "Get away from there." You know, they said they could have planted another one in, you know, something right. in there. But fortunately, they hadn't. But the funny thing was, my car was parked right up at the rotunda. It was the nearest parking slot to the rotunda. Mm-hmm. And where those pillars were bashed and everything. And I opened that, and here, all that had happened was the paper bag that my groceries were in was torn. But so they were all lying over on their side. They'd been standing upright. It was a small bag of groceries. But there was a jar of pickles, and the glass hadn't broken. Nothing had broken. And they weren't flung all over the right. trunk. It was just they just as if the bag had fallen over on its side. So they talk about you should, if you're going to be near an explosion or mm-hmm. earthquakes or anything like that, a car, you know, gives you more of the bouncy, you know, the uh-huh. tires and the springs and all that, the shocks. And that proved it to me that it makes a big difference. If I'd been standing there, I probably would have been killed.
Yeah.
You know? But in the car, I would have been all right.
But they never found any...
No. No, they never
did. They must
have
done a fairly thorough investigation, I would imagine.
Well, I would certainly hope they did. Gosh, that was a terrible thing. One of the hardest things to replace was they didn't have anybody left who did that kind of work, that full whatever it is,
to
make it look like marble on
right.
those pillars.
Right.
And they finally found somebody who did a good job, but it wasn't as...
It looks very nice.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't quite as pretty as it had been, mm-hmm. but we were lucky to get it. No, no, no.
It also destroyed a replica of the Liberty Bell, mm-hmm. too, didn't it?
They figured that's where the bomb was put, was mm-hmm. under the Liberty Bell. Mm-hmm. And that bell was, she says, eating these cherries that are so good. Mm. The bomb was purchased... by contributions of pennies from the school kids.
The bell.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Did I say the bomb?
Yes.
Oh, good Lord. But it wasn't enough money to buy the whole thing, but the city or whoever did the rest of it, did more than just matching. But the school kids were also proud of their bell, you know, that they had put the money for, and I thought that was... shame for somebody to blow up their bell.
Well, when you came onto the council, Mayor Schrunk was on there, of course, from mm-hmm. 1957, and Frank Ivancy came on at what time?
I don't know. He was on when I came on. Mm-hmm. So he had been an executive assistant to Terry.
Oh.
He'd worked for him. And got himself appointed. I think he was appointed. Maybe he ran. Maybe he wasn't appointed. I can't remember. He'd been a school teacher in Eastern Oregon. I remember one time my husband and I were on a trip in Eastern Oregon, fishing trip as a matter of fact. And we went into this little store, whether it was to ask for directions or what, I can't remember, but I gave my name to this nice young lady. She was in her 20s, I think, and for something, the circumstances elude me, but she didn't, she said, "Oh, aren't you in the city council in Portland?" I said, "Yes." And just, Oh, she says, you know Frank Ivansey, don't you? And I said, yes, he's on. And she says, he used to be my, and whatever it was, I can't remember, math, or it wasn't math, anyway, he wasn't any good at math. I forget, he was her teacher in high school, and she said, boy, she says, I don't envy you.
What did you say?
I said, well, I think I can understand, or something like that.
You know, going back to this part on Frank Ivansey, that the contrast between his public and private side.
Yeah.
I read a Willamette Week article in 1976 that said that, you know, he had this very pleasant private side, and that the public side of him was really much darker, and that he had problems articulating policy well and had no management style.
Uh-huh.
Would you characterize him that way?
I think that's probably a pretty good description.
But he had a pretty solid constituency, did he?
Oh, you bet he did. He played to them, played it to the hilt.
Uh-huh.
And they did a poll on us, comparing the two of us, and it was amazing. His constituency either had no education, or they stopped in grade school, and he hardly any in the educated.
I saw that.
Did you see that one too?
In fact, I'll give you a copy of it. It's part of the.
Oh, I'm surprised that it is in here, mm-hmm. because I don't know whether it had been released to the press or not, but I was just amazed. And on the other hand, mine were the the higher educated and the younger. His were the old. They were old and. Elderly, and the income level was low, mm-hmm. and the education was low, and mine was just the other way around. But the younger, I had some of the younger, and they had just recently gotten the vote down. Is it 18 now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, I know that they worked on that.
Yes, I'm pretty sure it is down to that, since it doesn't affect me personally, I forgot.
Right.
But, it's a terrible turnout from the young folks. Unfortunately, supposedly they were giving them. If they're old enough to fight for their country, they're old enough. If they're old enough to die for their country, they're old enough to vote. But they really don't seem to give a damn. It's a shame because you think they're the ones that have the civics classes and all this. But their turnout in that particular election was very bad, and. Who is the fellow who was the darling of the young people who was running for president and then he lost out in the, I think he was gray-haired, but he was younger. Was there someone like Anderson or?
Well, there was an Anderson from Illinois.
And appealed to the young and the liberal.
Uh-huh. There was McCarthy.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, I know he did too. But this was after mm-hmm. McCarthy, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was Anderson. And I met him later. I said, "Where were you when I needed you? If you'd been in Portland, if you'd been on the ballot, I probably would have been in office." But
well, there was. Frank Ivansey, just as you were coming on, had gone through a very tight contest with Tom Walsh. I guess he had defeated Tom Walsh in 1970.
Yeah.
And that sure would have been a different makeup for the council.
Oh, it certainly would have. It certainly would have. And Walsh and Neal were very close, mm-hmm. and close in as friends and as in philosophy.
Right.
Right.
You came on, of course, in 1970, March of 1970.
Mm-hmm.
And Lloyd Anderson was appointed to the council after the death of William Bowes in October of 69.
I was trying to remember how. So he'd only been on October.
Only a few months before.
5 months before I came on. In fact, he probably hadn't been on quite that long. I don't know how long it took him to.
Yeah.
Oh, he came on in October, though.
Okay. That's right. And then Neil Goldschmidt came on
after the election.
After the election, he topped a field of 16 candidates in the primary, I believe, upon the retirement of Mark Grayson, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Buck, everybody called it.
Is that Buck?
Buck Grayson, Grayson, yeah.
Who are these people that we haven't talked about? Buck Grayson and Bose and Earl.
Well, Buck Grayson was a real sweet guy. He was old school. He didn't, I think he'd been an athlete too. I know his brother was. Bobby Grayson was a top athlete. And Buck was very interested in sports, everything of that nature. And he had the water bureau. Pretty sure he did. And it pretty much runs itself. It's a business, and it's Buck was a sweet guy. He was the old school, and in those days, I don't think they did much. They just left it to the staff, I just say this because when I was on the Oregonian, you know, you'd hear people talking about things. I didn't cover City Hall ever, but the main thing I think about him is he was always saying, "Now look out! Now don't get the horse before the cart." It's a terrible thing to be about the only thing you can remember about a fellow commissioner, but he was a very nice man. And when I first went on, of course, I didn't know the issues. Issues that come up both in the legislature and in the city government are things that sometimes have come up over and over, and so you're familiar with them, and they all hit you stone cold dead when you walk in cold. And I spent so much time studying the issues that were coming up to council and learning my bureaus there are two things on the in the commission forum. You're an administrator and you run your own bureaus. You actually run them. At least you have the authority to run them. Some people didn't. They just let the bureaus run themselves. And then you are a legislator on the council. You vote on policy matters or permissions or whatever, all the things that you vote on in council chamber. So when you hit it new, you have an awful lot to learn if you're going to learn and you're going to do a good job. And I suffer from being something of a perfectionist, and so I'd kill myself off trying to learn all that stuff and study the issues before we voted on them. Well, the man I replaced, they tell me, there was a leather couch in his office, and it said he took long naps every afternoon on that couch. Long naps. Lord, I'd get up in the dark, and I'd go to bed, I'd go home in the dark. You know, I felt like a mole. You know, I'd prune my roses by street light. Here again, when we were having all that trouble, and all the, I was chewed out by the cop shop for going out and working it in the dark, because the roses are right. Well, they're not there anymore. You've been to the house, but they were all a double row all the way down between the houses, right out to the almost to the street. So, I was.
They thought somebody might be lurking in the bushes.
No question that they, because I'd had my share of death threats and.
Really?
In fact, my finest hour was when I was mayor. I had four totally unrelated death threats in 2 days. Can you imagine? But anyway.
What were they about?
Well, let's see. One of them, it's funny, I can't remember now. One of them was a young black gal who came into... At that time, it was my campaign headquarters, which was about a block away from City Hall. Whether that was when I was first No, it couldn't have been when I was first appointed. I hadn't been able to build up enough animosity to get four in 2 days. That must have been towards the end. And she just went in and told somebody in there that I was going to be killed. I think she said shot, but I don't remember. And what were the other three? She didn't say anything about why or what. She just took off again right away, fast. And let's see, what could they have? I wonder if I had one, probably one of them was this old gal. She'd been a foot, whether she was a doctor or what's the other, a chiropractor or...
Well, there's a podiatrist.
Podiatrist. Now, is that a medical doctor or is that a...
Right.
I don't think she was a medical doctor. Her name was Dr. Irene.
The person that fits the shoes for, or fits insoles into your shoes.
No,
I
don't know. I think.
Corns.
I think so. And I think she worked on feet.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think her last name was Waldo. Irene Waldo. Dr. Irene, I think. And she was a little old, gnarled old, and she had close ties with the Posse Comitatus. And you've heard of the Posse Comitatus.
Of course.
Right. Well, she...
They were active even then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And she was... I felt sorry for the poor old gal. Her house was a disaster, and she... the water had been turned off for lack of payment, and she was still living in the house, and... I think her electricity had, I don't know, but I kept trying to find, when I heard about this, there was something that came up before the consul, because she lived in Laurelhurst, and there were some lovely homes around over there, and here was this god-awful looking little house, and it needed paint badly, and it was all overgrown, and the shrubbery, and the grass, it was a disaster, and people had reported it to the nuisance bureau and the city. What the city does is if they go out and inspect, and if it's bad enough, why then they contract out to have it cleaned up. Mm-hmm. So often it's blackberry vines that grow
right.
all through it and encroach out into the sidewalk, and people complain because they're getting scratched by blackberry vines. And anyway, we contract out and have it mowed and mm-hmm. the debris collected and cut back, and then they charge the cost plus, and I think the city took a 5% addition, something like that, for administration of all this, because it took city employees and it
sure.
took dealing with the and paying, collecting the money and paying the guy who did the work. And I think that she had that happened, and she had come to appeal not have to pay that. And because I remember, I thought the house was deserted. They had told me that no one was living in there. But when she testified in the court, she said that she was living there. Well, I don't know. But I know that she was involved with the posse. They had taken her under their wing, and
the posse was sort of pro anarchy.
Yeah, they absolutely. They didn't. They were against government and no taxes,
mm-hmm.
and what all I and they had done violence.
Mm-hmm.
They hadn't done violence in Portland that I know of, and I don't think that they knew of it. The police at that time knew where they met. In fact, when I was riding with one of my drivers, I didn't have a driver till after I became mayor, and then someone from the intelligence department, a police officer, would drive me because of the times. They were having all this, the times and the threats. But he showed me where they met, where the posse met. They at that time they had someone inside, either Stooley or somebody, or a plant. I don't know which or what. But I probably knew at the time, but it's been a long time now. But anyway, someone informed them that they were going to get me. But in fact, he told them the day that they were going to get me. It was in council chamber, and it was either a Wednesday afternoon or a Thursday afternoon. We met Wednesday mornings, Wednesday afternoons, and Thursday afternoon. And that day, there were a bunch of posse members in the council. They'd given, the police had given me some pictures of posse members, in case I recognized anybody. Yeah. And she was there that day, too. But and they insisted on my wearing a blouse that was lined with covered. The blouse covered a what do you call it?
A bulletproof
vest. Yeah, and it was a very plain blouse, just bulky. I looked like Mildred Schwab, you know. And anyway, and then they also gave me a briefcase that. They'd lined one side of the briefcase with this lead stuff, and I was to grab that and pull it up in front of my face if anybody ever pointed a gun at me. And it was so funny because I'd be carrying this damn briefcase as I'd be going down to the planning commission in the next block from City Hall or going places, and people were always being very, very gallant and offering to take my briefcase, and I'd say, "Oh no, thank you." And they'd say, "Oh yes, here." And they'd grab it and blow up their arm and go clear down to the ground.
What do you have
what
in here?
What have you got in this
lead?
Thing, you know? It was really something. But anyway, I don't know if that particular day nobody shot at me or anyone else. Mildred was terrified when we alerted the rest of the council about the threat. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't going to go to council. And I said, "Mildred, I'm the one they're going to shoot, not you, you nut." And anyway, then she said, "I don't think you ought to go." She said, "I'm not going to go unless you stay away. If you're the one they're going to be shooting," she said, their aim might be bad. She was afraid they were going to get her. I thought that was so funny. But anyway, the council was full of guys from intelligence department, too. It was packed. They were all posse and cop shop boys. And it was a little difficult to keep my mind on the agenda, running that console and keeping my eyes, because they're right close up to you, you know. It shouldn't be hard. And then the balcony is not all that well, wasn't all that well guarded then. It was unlocked on console days, and anybody could come into the balcony, and there was nobody up there. People could pop in that swinging door and pop off at you. And
did you ever find any violence? Did you ever have any violence directed at you during council sessions?
No. So every once in a blue moon, somebody would scream and yell. We had a police officer who sat at a desk in the council chamber. I don't know what he would have done if he dozed most of the time. But
it seems like, I mean, I haven't been to very many council meetings, but it seems like some of them, the arguments got pretty heated.
They get pretty hot sometimes. Yeah. They really do, whether they know what they're talking about or not.
Right.
But it's usually the ones who don't know what they're talking about who are the most incensed.
Well, what about these other two counselors, Bose and Earl? I know you
They were nice
Earl.
Guys. Yeah, I replaced Earl. And Bose was a sweet guy. I knew them both. I've known them both for years, very lightly. You know, having been a reporter and run into them at various civic gatherings, and they were nice and very friendly. And that's just about all I can say. Mm-hmm. I knew that about Earl. I was told that the fellow who was his executive assistant. Oh, he was a nothing. He didn't. He bragged that he'd never written a letter when he was in Bo's office. And he had been Bo's driver. And I guess Bo's had an alcohol problem. And I guess Terry and maybe the rest of the council had told him that he had to have a police driver because he was an accident waiting to happen. And so then he named the guy his his executive assistant. Unkind soul said that he probably, by the time he'd driven him around everywhere, and he knew so much, when he asked for the job, Stanley had to give it to him. This is all secondhand stuff because I did not naturally work there with him. Nor did I work there with Bose. You see, Bose was replaced 5 months before I came on.
Terry Anderson.
Lloyd Anderson. That's right. I went. I think he was a harder worker than I suspect than Stanley Earle. He had public works, and Stanley Earle had the fire department, and he loved. I understand it went to the fires and stuff, but the fire department is pretty self-sufficient. It runs itself pretty well. I did, when I got the fire department, I had regular weekly meetings with the heads of all of my bureaus, and it came as kind of a surprise to most of the bureaus that they were having to come and report to the commissioner and tell them what's going on and what sort of things they, if they have anything they wanted introduced at council meetings, they had to come and talk to me about it first. It wasn't just going to be automatically put on the council calendar by my secretary, which is what happened with my predecessor. And
so your predecessors were the much more passive in their role.
Well, Stanley Earle napped the afternoon away, and so it was, but...
Also, city auditor Ray Smith died and was replaced by George Yurkovich,
right. And they were all the old-timer types. Smith was a politician's politician. People would tell me, like Yurkovich told me, and with such awe that Smith would buy turkeys for people, election years, of course. But they looked at they. If you've ever seen pictures, they looked like the portly.
Right.
Kind of red-faced, and I have no idea what kind of a job Smith or Yurkovich did, other than swear us in. But they had large staffs, so I rather suspect that they delegated most of their
chores. One interesting statistic was that after this transition from these older men to the new council, that the average age of the five city fathers, they referred to it in the paper, went down from 59 to about 45 in 1 year. I think you were 49 or 48 when you came onto the council.
I was in my 40s, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Neil Goldschmidt was quite young.
He was a kid.
So,
And Anderson was young. He was younger than I am. I'm sure.
Maybe you could give me kind of a brief description of how the how City Hall is organized in terms of the bureaus.
Oh, Lord. Holy cow.
I know that's a big chore, and there are so many bureaus. But.
I'll try and abbreviate it. Well, there's the mayor. And he is a commissioner as well, and four commissioners. And the difference, the major difference between the mayor's job, as far as powers go, is he assigns the bureaus, he or she assigns the bureaus amongst the commissioners. And then when they are given the bureaus, they are administered by those commissioners. And there's the Water Bureau, and then there's Public Safety, and Public Works, and Public Utilities, and Bureau of Parks. I think those are the five major bureaus. Then there's a bunch of other little things that, not necessarily little, but they're, Fire Bureau. Yeah, and public safety used to, years ago, used to be the fire department and the police department, but they hadn't been together for a long time. Stanley Earle had the fire barrel, and then it was given to me after he died. And the mayor usually keeps the police department and finance and administration.
And why is that?
Well, it makes a lot of sense because the police department is, there's always something going on. I mean, it's by the nature of the beast, there's always